report about what Van was doing up there. Maybe it was a cable from him, I forget. We couldn't believe it. I mean, we were rolling in the aisles. It was so funny. And for the life of me, I can't remember what it was about.
Is it a misunderstanding of situation?
No, it was a misunderstanding. It was this magnificent, this enormous eagle really flying. And it was just funny. Well, that's all personal sides.
But that's all right. There's no way to, somebody like Van who's gone, how is there any way to get insights about him?
Well,
unless
true
you, his personality.
True enough.
A lot of people have said, don't concentrate on personality when you write. That's, if as you
understand,
personality is the key.
Intelligence is 95% biographics.
Right, and history is written by people.
That's right.
Not by organizations. People tend to disguise themselves in organizations, but it's people who create the organizations. So, yeah, I always find that any kind of fact in history is subjective according to the individual who was there at the time. But that is what you have to deal with. That's where history is. It's not with an organization so much. Okay.
Well, anyway, cannot avoid personalities, that's right.
No,
so,
and I...
These are just little asides.
Yeah, no, I'm very interested.
Jack Horgan, or Roy, up in I-Corps, was very good.
Okay. Is he still around?
I have no idea. I simply do not know.
He was
one of the Miami contingent. He was a great devotee of Ted Shackley.
Well, he must have, if he was still around when you left, shortly thereafter, Shackley became chief of station.
Yeah, he was around there when I was there. I thought when you said he's still around, I meant today, 1986.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know.
No, okay.
Alive, dead, whatever.
Did Hart give way to Shackley in the end of 67? Do you remember?
It was about then. You see, John had... detached retina, and he had to leave early. First it was one eye, and then it was the other. And they brought him back, and I don't know how they repaired this. I don't know whether they had lasers yet. I don't think they did.
Yeah, they can't hard to do surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the surgery was successful, or whatever it was they did was successful, within limits.
Mm-hmm.
But after his second operation, or whatever, they said you're going to have to pull this guy out because he's going to be blind if you leave him in Vietnam.
Because he needed proper attention?
Well, avoidance of stress, aircraft flying all the time.
Changing pressures.
Military operations.
Right.
Mortar attacks, whatever.
Yeah.
I had a big parade in Saigon there one day, and VC mortars came in right down the street from where. We were watching the parade from one of the secretary's apartments there.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Catholic. He seems kind of a nice guy. It's not a place for a person with a physical illness to be. So, particularly with something like detached retina.
When you are actually writing up I-6, and either in Comer's office...
Or in the station.
Well, were you in contact with Hart daily? No. Okay.
No. I could see him whenever I wanted. No need to.
Okay. Who were the main personalities in the station at that time? Would you say the people who had the most impact in the station?
That's hard to say because I don't remember, frankly. Our deputy chief of station, he'd been replaced. We had a new one out there. I don't know who he was. I don't even remember his name.
So it's so big at this point. The station's so big it's hard to determine.
Well, yeah, it was a big station.
Yeah.
Totally aside from field operations, the station itself was a very big thing.
Yeah.
But Rocky Stone is still there. A fellow by the name of John Sherwood, who was running propaganda type operations, he was there.
What are the proper? I have an idea what propaganda is. Is that literature, leaflets?
Well,
is that under RD?
Yeah, no, don't ask. I can't tell you. He was running station level propaganda and covert operation, as I remember. And what he did is, I don't really know. But he had nothing to do with the revolutionary development field work.
Okay.
That was under Lula by this time.
Okay. Sounds like it must have been some heavy stuff.
Well, you do what you can. It's like that Chinese stuff I was running with the Chinese and the Russians back when I was in headquarters. Okay. Same kind of thing. That was the basic idea, I think. Okay, so...
Now, how are you feeling? Are you getting a little burned out for today?
No, but you probably are.
I'm not, no.
Nope. We can go a little while yet.
Because I got this one tape here, and then after that it'll have been 4 hours.
Well, let's finish the tape now.
Okay.
That'll be it, then. I don't know how much longer it'll take.
Okay.
There's one,
I think,
one
that
major element we've left out of all of this.
Okay.
And that is... that is the detainee problem.
Okay. Now, is this going to involve the PICs?
Well, it starts out with the PICs. The province interrogation centers were places that defectors, chihuahuas, or prisoners could be taken for questioning.
Okay.
Under control, situated circumstance, so forth and so on.
I understand there was a PIC program, actually a PIC Province Interrogation Center program for developing it and building it, and that was headed by Tucker Gugelman?
Well, no, you remember I said that it had been started.
Mm-hmm.
And Tucker continued. He had 8 or 10 of these things built when I got there.
Okay.
And I built the other 34 or whatever.
Okay.
But we also had training programs to go with that. We would train police interrogators.
Okay.
We ran training schools. It's all part of the interrogation program.
Okay. Where did the training take place?
It would take place in Saigon. It would take place in regional headquarters. It would take place in province.
Okay.
We would hire women teaching how to type to work in these places. Well, the whole thing, from start to finish. And we paid a bunch of the payrolls in this place, too.
And was that all piastres?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, so what you're training is Vietnamese.
Training Vietnamese.
Americans
didn't do any of this.
Okay.
They didn't do any interrogation.
Okay, all right.
First of all, they couldn't speak Vietnamese.
Right, what's the point of having an American interrogating a Vietnamese?
Yeah.
Right.
No, okay. we train the National Police.
The special branch?
Okay. Special branch people. And we hire secretaries for them, typists, record keepers, collators.
Is there somebody that I can talk to about the training itself?
No, the only guy that was getting it, he handled a lot of that. I forget his name. Died of emphysema, just so I can
But these were CIA instructors.
This was handled by our province officers.
Okay. Okay.
And in Saigon, we had special instructors. Some of them we'd bring them out from Washington to teach interrogation.
And would they come out as part of USAID? National Police Public Safety Branch.
So they'd come out as Americans. I mean, the light military cover, nominal military cover, but nobody asked the question. Nobody cared.
Okay.
They came in country on an official passport, left on an official passport. That was it.
Okay.
The Vietnamese didn't care. The station didn't care. Embassy didn't care.
Okay.
They just came. I mean, you know, it was a conveyor belt at times there.
Okay.
So many people coming in and going out.
Okay.
But.
I'm just wondering where the interrogators themselves get their training in training interrogation.
Oh, well, we did have that CIA training interrogation.
Okay.
And a lot of the interrogation trainees were people who worked with Russian defectors who developed interrogation skills over the years.
I see. Okay.
I remember some of those fellows came out. Some of my old colleague from the Soviet division came out. This is only on the periphery of the larger problem of what, how do you screen,
okay,
and then what you do with identified VC. Once you got them, what are you going to do with them?
Well, I understand that they filled up the ranks at a periphery.
When you go through some of these village sweeps and things like that, you'd have whole compounds, or I should say, corrals, barbed wire enclosures, filled full of Vietnamese just sitting there looking at you all day long, packed full of you.
I heard there was actually a project corral.
Men, women, and children. I think there was an operation corral.
Operation corral,
It was one of the region sweeps.
Okay, all right.
the Viet Cong was news about this since they pulled out before we hit.
Because they had infiltrated.
There were legal questions. There were, what do we do? Do we re-indoctrinate them? Do we shoot them? Do we do this? Do we do that? Do we put them back on the farm? How do we control them? This. Well, so one of John Hart's tasks on the original ISAC's charge, original General Staff of Pacification, is what do we do with these prisoners? Do they have prisoner of war status or don't they? There's no war going on. But yet the Americans were saying we're treating these people like prisoners of war in Geneva. The Swiss were saying, okay, let us in there. We want into those prison camps. This went round and round. The long and the short of it, nobody wanted to get the name of the jailer of Vietnam attached to it. USA didn't want to touch the prison problem with a 10-foot pole. Military wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. These POWs are forgettable. And when the war is over, we'll give them shipping back to North Wales, like that, you know. Facetious. And so part of our task was to investigate this problem and to recommend some solutions to that. We never did. What we did was beg the question. We tasked that over to the new ISAC staff, the plans and programs element of the ISAC staff. What they did with it, I don't know. But it was a major problem because basically you were running a revolving door operation. Capture VC, and then a week later you'd capture them again, and 2 weeks later you'd capture them again. Assuming they were VC, I mean, the guys that we thought were VC. And often they were. But in a lot of these sweeps, all you'd get would be old men, women, and kids. Well, okay, there's VC in there too. Probably some of the women, probably some of the old men, but nobody knows really who they were. Well, the younger men, they'd be off in the boonies. It's not correct to say that they were necessarily there of their own free will. They kidnap children, teenagers.
Conscript them. Sure. When does the Chu Hoi program? Is that an early program?
That's an early program. It predates any of our being in Vietnam.
Is there a Chu Hoi expert? Is there somebody who... I know that later under Cords...
The answer is no.
Later under Cords, when Cords is developed, broken down into 12 divisions, there is a division for Chu Hoi.
Okay, well, but about that I know nothing.
No, okay.
About that.
Yeah, that's after you leave, But by that time, it had certainly become institutionalized.
Yeah.
And lots of money was being poured into it.
Some people say that, according to some of the stuff that you get today, that the VC would look upon Chu Hoi as R&R. They'd go down there and get a good meal for a month, eat well for a month, and do this and do that, and then they'd go back to the hills with all their wounds here, with everything else.
Who
knows?
In your reporting on this problem, you didn't make recommendations that there should be next to PICS a facility for Chu Hoi or something like that?
No, that was a Vietnamese program.
Oh, okay.
And it was always separate, never physically co-located with with the picks.
Okay.
Hi, honey.
Hi. You got exhausted this
well,
weekend.
Yeah.
Today is November 4th, Election Day.
I'm the program budget staff. That was the executive director's staff for advice to the director.
Okay.
And the director had his own personal staff,
mm-hmm.
Which included a number of personal or special assistants. And actually, when I was up in PPB, I was worked for them from time to time, maybe 2 weeks at a time, as the director's personal assistant. And what this person does is screen correspondence, screen cable traffic, screen intelligence material, memoranda from the director of chiefs and so forth.
Was that Richard Helms at the time?
No, not when I was up there. Later, in 1970. 273, this was Bill Hurley.
Oh, okay.
Not yet been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
I retired, I think, well, I don't remember exactly. But in any event, he was up there. First of all, he was executive director, and then he was acting DCI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was up there as his personal assistant when he was acting DCI. The amendments and or corrections on yesterday's mm-hmm. discussion, but not one thing I wanted to say that I was perhaps condescending and overly critical of what's his name, Lansdale.
Yep.
Yeah. He was a fifth wheel. Everything I said about him was true, but it mm-hmm. was sort of sad in a way because here was a guy a very bright guy who had once been enormously successful in a particular area
mm-hmm.
that was sort of supernumerary by this time.
Okay.
And we had strategies, we had programs which we were attempting to operate and attempting to make successful. And his suggestions almost invariably would require major modifications to whatever anybody was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the suggestions were not all that good. So it was the old problem of bureaucratic operation versus innovation.
Well, do you recall offhand any of these?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just they were off the wall. It was the kind of thing that you just hate to try to get in. They were things that were impossible to do.
Yeah.
Some of them might be irrelevant,
yeah.
And so on. So that, as I say, it was a little sad in a way, and I didn't really mean to come across as condescending toward it.
Well, his achievements certainly stand on their own.
Their own merits.
He
the other thing had to do with that Ford Corporation business.
Okay.
So I checked the paperwork. Really, all wasn't all that great. All that Ford had was the you might call it the operating committee at the top, with support supported by a very small statistical reporting unit that put everything together for these guys for them to consider and make decisions on. The other material that I discussed yesterday about the breakdown of the original ISEX staff,
mm-hmm.
The plans and programs section, the statistical reporting section, the report section, and the investigation section, that was two units that I simply added onto onto a statistical reporting core, so to speak.
Okay.
In terms of our particular situation there in Saigon.
Okay, let me just make sure. Please continue.
And then finally, the I mentioned yesterday a book on information systems I picked up at Saigon. That was not correct.
Okay.
My memory failed me on that. The book involved was by Rentis Likert, I think, who was at the University of Michigan.
Can you spell it?
Yes. R-E-N-S-I-S. L-I-K-E-R-T.
Okay.
The name of the book was New Patterns in Management. This is a seminal work in management theory, and your wife will be, mm-hmm. I think, probably very familiar with it if she does not have a copy. In any event, it's a classic.
Okay. Very good.
And
if she doesn't, she'll get one.
It has in there, it has in there what interested me particularly was this whole concept of self-correcting systems, self-improving systems, by virtue of the management and information handling in that system. And this is what was behind those reporting formats that I discussed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Behavior shaping report.
And
systems.
Were you able to find one to show me? You said you thought you might have been able to locate one of the reports.
No. Did I say that?
Yeah.
I don't have any of those reports.
Oh, okay.
I know that.
All right.
I know that.
Those were the reports handed to you by the province.
Well, they were province
officer in charge.
Yeah.
Right.
They were sent in from province through the regional officer who wrote his own report on top of it.
Okay.
And then we studied them in Saigon and packaged them and sent them to Washington.
Yeah, I believe you. At one point you said you thought you might have had.
Sorry. If I gave that impression, I was wrong because
okay.
I know I don't have any of those old report formats.
How lengthy might they have been?
As in the CIA field operations,
mm-hmm.
they could go up to, I would say, 4 pages in length.
Okay.
A monthly report.
Mm-hmm.
When people objected to the time it took, and it would take an officer in the provinces 2 or maybe even 3 days to do this report,
mm-hmm.
and a number of them fussed about the paperwork involved, and my answer was that it was simply an investment of their time, a certain percentage of their time, in letting the rest of the world know what really was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that as such, it was simply part of the job. And if it took them 3 days' time, well then, plan it as best they could, but still, we preferred to have a good report rather than...
I would think that it must have had incredible value in terms of lessons learned
I think it did. I know it was appreciated in Washington. Washington mm-hmm. had never seen anything like that.
Sure. I would think it would be very valuable. Of course, mm-hmm. I put a lot of importance on written summaries of things because
yeah.
I think that that's what survives, especially from month to month.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see, I gave you the title of that book, didn't I? New Patterns in
yes.
Management.
Yeah,
okay.
And you also gave me the author.
Yeah, Rentis Likert. The other subject I talked about the, which may not have been on the tape, about the ability to operate in the gaps of large organizations.
Okay.
That goes back to an even more classic book, Administrative Behavior by a fellow by the name of Herbert Simon. And once again, a pioneering work in organization theory. Published either very late 40s or very early 50s.
Okay.
And for which, as I recall, Simon received, if not the Nobel Prize, some other major award,
mm-hmm.
worldwide recognition,
okay.
based upon his authorship of this book back 30 plus years ago. Once again, your wife should be familiar with this book, or at least if she's an MBA. Mm-hmm. Because once it's seminal in the field, organization theory. Okay, now you had some
questions. Yeah, and I had some follow-up questions,
sure.
too. Okay. The six regional offices, I understand there's four cores, I-core, two-core, three-core, four-core. How are the six regional offices then distributed through the four cores?
Okay. We had a regional office of Wei and Da Nang, so that's two in I-Corps.
Okay.
Regional office at Nha Trang.
Okay.
Regional office at Da Lat.
Okay.
It's 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not right. Regional office at Benoit.
Benoit, okay.
Regional office at
Canto.
And I'm wondering whether we had one at Mito also.
Okay.
Possibly we had one at Mito and not at Wei.
Okay.
I don't remember. We'd have to find some documents to tell
us. That would, if there is Mito, Canto, Binhua, Nha Trang, Wei, and Da Nang, that's six. Or is one of them Saigon? Is there a regional office in Saigon?
No, there isn't. Is that six?
That's
two
six.
Two in I Corps, two in four Corps.
That's right.
But Da Lat. You crossed a lot out.
And I thought Benoit would be, Nha Trang would be two-core.
Two-core. And Da Lat also is two-core.
That's also two-core.
Yeah.
Did you have two in two-core?
Well, we had a regional officer in Da Lat, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, the Nha Trang regional officer handled the coastal provinces.
Okay.
And the Da Lat regional officer handled the Mon Yard provinces.
Okay. Well, then that
would be seven, you see.
That would be seven. So it's either Wei or
Mito. It's either Wei or Mito that was not a regional office.
Okay.
And
all right. And
I just don't remember.
All right. So I know Jim Ward would have been four core.
He was in four core.
One
yes.
of those two, and then there would have been some.
Jim Ward, I think, was Canto.
Okay. And
Bob Wall was Benoit. Jack Horgan was Da Nang.
Okay.
And I don't think I'd be able to tell you who the rest of them were.
One wasn't Harry Mostakos, was it?
That name rings a bell, but I frankly don't know. If Harry became a regional officer, it was after I
had anything. He was a regional officer in I Corps, because I know this from not only from the congressional hearings, but also from talking with one of the province officers.
Yeah. Okay, I never even knew him, so.
Okay.
Well, there will be some documents that tell us what this.
Okay, that's
clarify that.
All right.
Yeah, Parker will know too.
Okay. Yes, that's right. I know there's some. I've tried to limit my questions to the before and him to after.
Sure.
Halfway through 66. In developing ISEX, and you were putting in place province officers in charge who were working in the field operations branch? Or are they a part, they are in ISEX and apart from field operations?
No, they were field, they were, when we came to the regional and province officers in charge, the Roitz and the Poiks, that was strictly CIA field operations.
Okay.
Now later on, some of those guys became, or most of them actually, became Phoenix coordinators.
Okay. But Phoenix as an organization exists separately from the province officer in charge. There's a Phoenix coordinator and then there's a province officer.
Well, the province officer may be, province officer may be the Phoenix coordinator. That's,
okay.
As a matter of fact, most of them were.
Okay.
But some of the Phoenix coordinators, as I recall, or perhaps USAID, or another one might be a military man.
It certainly
didn't have to be.
Certainly, in the later stages, it's all military.
Yeah.
And so then anybody who was military certainly wouldn't be the CIA province officer in charge.
True.
Okay. How would they then go about sharing their relationship with the special branch? Or would this simply...
Well, there was a committee structure established at each of these levels.
Okay.
Once again, we hope that the committee structure per se would not be a... non-operative kind of thing, but we had to have some machinery for coordination, okay. Bringing together everybody involved in this program.
Right.
So the province officer would be a member of the Phoenix Committee,
mm-hmm.
whether or not he was the
coordinator. I see. Okay.
But same with the regional officer.
Okay. Now.
Now most of the regional officers became Phoenix coordinators, as I recall.
Okay. And how long of a tour would a province officer?
Well, the CIA.